Following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here are David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
That's probably the best topic of the day. Hey, welcome. You're live. Welcome to the True Wealth Show. As you know, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. Today, just me and...
Just me, Katie.
And Katie in the show.
You just get me and me. You get the Mimi show.
Yeah, just so...
By the way, for the record, everybody has good days and bad days, right?
And this is not a good day.
It's not a bad day. It's not a horrible day, but it's not a good day. You have to take the good with the bad, right? Life has ups and downs. The market has ups and downs. Like, nothing ever just is positive all the time, right? And even people that you think are positive all the time have bad days. They just cry by themselves in a bathroom with nobody watching. So
wow.
I went there. We're going to go a little dark today. So I was teasing David.
It wasn't that dark to me.
So you know what? I was jokingly saying before the show, we should talk about bad advice. Because we aim to give good advice for what advice it is, right? Usually not financial advice that are specific. But we aim to give you guys good tidbits to hang your hat on. But what happens when you get bad advice? And sometimes you don't recognize it.
Yeah, bad advice or well-intentioned advice that's not good.
Oh, that's even better.
Right? Well-intentioned advice that's not good. Or this is the really tough one. What about stuff that is, it's really mean, but it is good advice? Right?
Oh, like, what if you even have, like, better. Advice where tough the, love? Like, yeah, tough love advice?
Yeah. So you're right. This could be fun today. I think we should unfold on this.
We're going to talk about the advice show, right? Like, with the good advice, the bad advice, the tough love advice.
The tough love advice. And
And what this means to you as an investor.
Wait,
what?
Nothing. Never mind. You didn't hear that.
Not Adelvice. Shut up. Like, David. Oh, gosh. It's going to go probably to hell in a handbasket today, but you're going to be on the journey with us and you're going to enjoy it every step of the way.
There you go. And look, some of this is levity and laughter is medicine. Okay.
Yes.
That's part of it.
Amen,
and then,
brother.
You know what else? Perspective. Okay.
True.
Like a little perspective. First of all, there's always somebody that's got worse than you. So there's that perspective. If you look around, it's like, oh, I thought it was bad until, oh, okay. So it's all relative. But that's not the larger point of the show today. I like the idea of advice. And first of all, because that's what we
do.
That's what we do.
We give
right?
financial advice.
We do. Yeah, we're not brokerage.
And not we, me, but like our firm.
I mean, yeah, you don't get to do financial advice because that's,
because I'm not licensed
associated
for it. Right.
But advice like, hey, what's the best way to get this money moved from your account to the other account? You're super good at that. Like, you know the protocols and all the stuff. And it's like, so you can tell them, like, here's the process and here's what's going to be best.
Well, and we've had multiple shows about could and should, right? What you can do and what you should do are not always the same thing. So sometimes that's where that tough love advice comes in.
Right.
Right? Can I do this? Well, you can, but do you really want
but
to?
Should I? So, let's start with, this will be a fun exercise. What is some advice? Like, can you think of really bad advice that you've ever received or that you've taken? I have one right off the bat, by the way.
Can I think of some really
bad advice that you got where you look back and be like, what was that all about?
Yeah, my mom told me to perm my hair in the 7th grade. And not only did I do it once, I think I did it like 3 or 4 times. I look like a French poodle. It's so bad. It's so bad. And perms are coming back, by the way. Which just makes me go like facepalm. But yeah, I looked at my mother the other day and said, what were you thinking? And she's like, I don't know. They were in trend.
I feel like there's something biblical about fashion trend right now. Oh. It's like, oh, the sins of the father will be visited on the next generation. And I'm like, we're repeating the whole fashion thing.
Oh.
Like, I swear hypercolor is going to be here any moment.
By the way, I will totally buy hypercolor if it comes back.
Yeah,
I loved hypercolor.
Yeah, so I'm like, it's just under different names now. Now it's not temperature. It's like, oh, like there's a...
It'll be climate color.
Like Del Sol or something that it changes in sunlight. So it's UV responsive as opposed to temperature responsive.
No, whatever.
Yeah,
it's still
so
hyper-color.
Indoors, it's a different color than outdoors. So
it's like they don't
that.
Call it Atkins anymore. They call it keto, but it's still ketosis, which is really. Okay, yeah. What's the bad advice that you got?
Buy as much house as you can afford.
Oh, I've heard that one a lot.
Right? That was the, this happened to me and my wife. We built a place together, and we did that because building it meant construction financing, which meant, and the markets were expanding. So we started, it was February of 2005, right? And we get started, and we finish in December of 2005, and we move into a new home. And we, the construction loan, by the time we got final appraisal, had so much equity in the property that we did not need a down payment.
Wow. Awesome.
Right? So that worked out. And you think to yourself, okay, score one for the financial guy. Somebody's knowing how to play this thing, right? And I'm like, yeah.
That was more luck of the markets going up
and
at that
just
time.
Just so you know, even today, if you go look on Zillow at the estimated value of the home that we used to live in, it has still not climbed to the height of the appraised value that we received in December of 2005 for our final takeout loan.
Oh my gosh.
So that's how, and now it fell by like 50% after we moved in. By 2008, the property was so underwater that we couldn't possibly sell it. So we were structurally trapped.
Right.
And ended up living in that home for 12 years. And by the time we had three kids in this place, and you'd think it was about 2,200 square feet, right? And you're like, well, come on, that's plenty of square footage. But like the bedrooms are small, the closets are small, the floor plan was very open. We were out of places to put stuff. Like there's a piano and kid toys in the dining room.
Well, I remember like your home office then became the nursery, which
right?
would only fit a nursery, because it
like
really was
just
not
the crib and changing table, nothing else.
Right. Like it wasn't big enough to be a bedroom.
Yes.
It was like a nook with a door.
Yes.
It was truly a home office, a
yes.
nook with a door.
So, and you know what? There's plenty of love in that house. It's not like we suffered being in there. I actually really liked
it. Oh,
the
and
house.
I bet the minute you moved in, you were like, oh my gosh, from apartment living, you must have felt like you were like a palace.
Tall cotton.
You, right? You were
ya.
Like, this house is huge and in a great neighborhood.
But it did implode, right? And then we had, you know, it was like get as much mortgage as you can afford.
Oh, such bad advice too.
Well, then when 2008 came through, you know, it melted down the financial industry, and that was super, super lean. I mean, super lean. Like we were playing the shuffle game of like, make sure these bills, what order are we paying them in? And when does the cash come in? And when does it move around? And it was like, you know, ramen season. It was legit.
I've had the leverage your home to buy another home conversation with a family member who has done very well in real estate, might I add. And I feel like when you're giving advice, make sure that you're not taking your personal situation into consideration, but theirs. And it's the reason I say that is, you know, not everybody has the same financial history. You know, we've shared, I can't believe I'm going on 8 years with this company.
That's
I'm going
nutty.
Into my eighth year. Like
here
I went
in like
where did
a week
like,
or two.
Yeah. April 28th.
Yeah, I was gonna say
so
like,
I was like, where did like your 5 to 8? Like I feel like, I mean, I know it and I've said it, but it just, I don't know, felt like I woke up and I was like, oh my gosh, it's really been that long.
Right about the time they changed the studios. When we moved to the new studios.
Yeah, it was just like
and it was like, poof. Oh, and boom.
Yeah, it was crazy. But the reason I share that is I have changed industries 3 times. Since my 20s, right? So my finances have fluctuated based on industry, and I've moved to a different state for a job. I originally grew up in Southern California. So my life has fluctuated a lot more than this relative who was giving me the financial advice. And I think it's hard when you're like, well, look, I've been really successful. And it's like, yeah, but your life didn't necessarily mimic mine. Like I wasn't following the same exact steps you took. So how can I expect the same exact outcome?
Well, I don't know that you ever get the same exact outcome. This is probably the, especially since we're talking about, you know, mine was like buy as much house as you can afford.
Right.
I mean, that was advice that initially came from family members. And it was good advice up until that point. There hadn't been a material real estate correction in decades.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's just, well, get into the house and real estate goes up. So you may as well do that. And
right.
you need a place to live anyway. Right.
Right.
Which that's the funny advice when they say, well, you got to have a place to live anyway. I say, yeah, but, you know, in hindsight, we probably could have rented a place and spent less than our mortgage. And since we had no equity to show for it after 10 years, then it was no different than renting.
Well, and again, right, hindsight is 20/20.
Yep.
You didn't know a real estate correction was on the heels of, or not on the heels, but however you say it, coming up, right, in the next couple years. I mean, when you bought it, everything was fine, and you were happy and a newlywed and had a brand new house,
yes,
and life was good. Like,
well,
there was no way to forecast that that was going to happen.
You don't know a lot of the time.
The future?
When folks lie, right? Like, you don't know. Like, when banks lie, then, or like
how are,
sure,
yeah,
we have plenty of collateral. Or when you start, maybe it wasn't lies, but how about when you just start ignoring data, right? That's kind of what precipitated the housing crisis back in 2008,
right,
was that, you know, we were making loans to people that had no business getting the loans.
Right.
And, you know, banks would say at the time, well, you know, that was the policy and the federal government said, go ahead and do this. And, you know, we were trying to do all this sort of, you know, make home ownership reachable for the masses. But we did it without responsible use of credit and oopsie.
Right.
You know, and so that's, I could just, sorry, tell someone somewhere, someone listens to the podcast and goes, that's a racist comment. And I'm like, I pointed to nothing other than like reckless credit's reckless credit. Right.
Right.
I mean, it just is. And that, you know, you infer what you got to do, but that's on you. The reality is that there were changes to legislation for how collateral worked for banks, and it kind of created this house of cards effect. And, you know, we saw it. All of a sudden, people couldn't pay for things, and then the market got flooded with inventory, and, you know, it just, it collapsed.
Well, and the way we look at the market now, the housing market, you know, and I say we, it, about our age group, people that have lived through that market crash are going to treat real estate slightly different, right? Especially if they got burned by it. Now you have a personal debt in that whole thing because you bought your house, and now you're so now you're way more cautious anytime you buy or sell real estate.
It's funny because I've also lived through now 3 30+% market corrections just in my career, which most financial pros don't get to say.
So, right. But I mean, again,
you
so that
have
also
more than 20 years in the business now to have had that happen. You
that
have
also
to.
Affects how you give financial advice because you've seen it, right? It's the been there, done that sticker right on the back of the head. So your advice looks different than somebody who maybe is new to the industry that hasn't experienced that.
That is true. And I like what you said earlier, though. That I think advice, and this is something that we can tease this a little bit for the next segment, but is, you know, personal advice versus advice from a person?
Totally different.
Yeah, they are totally different. A lot of times folks want advice to come in a formula, right? They want it to be this simple, if you follow these steps, it'll work kind of deal. And it can, but also it doesn't always.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about that next. Is like, you know, when does the formula make sense? And when is there just not a formula? So when you follow the recipe or not, but we got to take an obscene profit break. So we'll do that. And there's the music. Good job. So stick around and we'll be covering more on The Advice Show where we're going to sort it out. That and more, but we got to take this break. So stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Advice Show today.
Where we're not giving advice,
we're
but we're talking about it.
Exactly. You know, why do we have to say that, right? If you've listened for a while, you've heard us say all the time that we don't take this as personal advice. That is totally relevant to this segment I want to talk about today, right? Why do we say that, Katie?
Well, because we have compliance issues that we need
to
follow.
That's actually the reason, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they basically have said, like, how can you make sure that the advice you're giving on the air is actually suitable for everybody? And we can't.
Well, I can do certain things, right?
Such as?
They're like, don't make stupid decisions. There's good advice for you. Okay. How about buy low and sell high?
Yeah.
There's, you know, and those are the kinds of things that are, they're not very useful, clearly, right? I mean, and you know, we get it. I'm screwing around. But I think the larger point is that finance, the advice actually is personal. And when you get into the fiduciary land, which is where we live, where when we make advice for our customers, we have to do it through the lens of what the customer needs, right?
And what is in their best interest.
Correct. And so, the fiduciary, the advice is intended for the best interest of the customer.
And David, there's been times when I've heard you say, like, here are your options, and I have to disclose that if you do this option, I get paid. And if you do this one, I don't get paid. But I'm not telling you that this other option where I don't get paid is a bad option because I don't get paid. Like, you have to kind of say, like,
or even disclosing, like, when there's a price difference, right? Price is not the only decision. This, if there was a thing that drives me nuts,
it is.
It is that people make decisions on price exclusively, and it's bad coaching, right? And here's the thing. If you look at your investments and the first thing you do is go look at the expense ratio of your fund, but you don't look at
how well it's performing.
Yeah, you don't look at the other data. I'll just call it other data. If you, all you look at is the cost of that, then what I would suggest to you is that's bad coaching.
Right.
Right? You have been trained, and you've been trained by companies where that's their value proposition, right? Like Vanguard says, we're an index fund. We're not trying to add any value or enhance in any of the ways that we for risk and return. We're just going to buy the category. And we're going to own it as cheap as possible. And we're going to support this decision through all of the various data forms and research that indicates why we think we're right.
Right.
Which, by the way, is what everybody does when they're selling you something.
You know what's interesting is we apply that sometimes to stocks, but I very rarely ever hear that applied to like a car. Like, oh, I have, you know, $10,000 to spend on a car. Okay, then any car will do as long as it's $10,000.
Right.
No, people are like, no, I wanted a truck. I wanted a this. I wanted a that. Why would it matter? If your budget was $10,000, why not just pick the first $10,000 car that worked? But that's what people try to do in our industry. They're like, well, sometimes, not always, and I'm generalizing.
Well, our listeners are smart.
Right.
So I know that if you're listening to the show by now, you're smart. That's good. Because there is more to the story. Okay. Now, keep in mind, when I start saying something like this, you should also look at this and say, follow the money a little bit, because if I was honest with you, and I'm going to try to be, first of all, you know, we pay for this program,
right?
Right. I mean, this is a in a
we
sense,
pay it's, to it's, air our opinion.
It's in a sense, it is paid advertising, and yet the content that we try to deliver is neutral, right? We're not attempting to sell very much, other than if you are in a position where you cannot do it yourself, get help.
Right.
And if you don't have that person,
Call us, right?
We kind of talk about that. But why do we give so much of this away?
Well, some of it's to build accountability and rapport.
Right. It's first of all, I want our listeners to understand that you can go to the internet and get this information.
Right.
Okay. There's no benefit to us trying to hide the information you could get anyway. Let me give it to you. The decision is about, do I understand it? Can I digest it? Can I manage it? Can I fit it into my life?
I think the last two are super important. Can I manage it? And can I fit it into my life? Now, I know all of our clients are smart people.
Yeah, I think generally so.
Right? But and they may be the professional in their field.
Sure.
Right? Some of them doctorate degrees and further education. But that doesn't mean that they understand everything about our industry.
Sure.
Right? And I mean, there's times when I love when you say, you know, like, I could change my own oil if I had to, but it's not the best use of my time. And I think those things are really important when it comes to advice. Like, are you paying somebody so that you can utilize your time better?
Right. And it's back to the advice.
Right.
So I had a conversation with a client earlier today, and I said, what makes what our firm does useful to our clients is not just the investment story. Because truthfully, there are lots of places you could go to get investments. And there are lots of places where their value proposition is you can buy the investments from us. They're relatively automated and they are low cost and easy.
Well, that's fine until your life isn't easy anymore.
Well, it's I mean, generally speaking, that's fine, period. Here's the issue. It's not very comprehensive.
True.
Right? You want to know what's really expensive in finance?
What?
Mistakes.
Yeah.
Right? Mistakes are really expensive. And you know what else is really expensive?
Fixing those mistakes.
That could be really expensive too. But missed opportunities.
Yeah. And those are the ones people don't talk about.
Right.
Like, I sold it and what I thought was high. And it's like, okay, great. But did it go higher?
Well, and I'm not even talking about that, because that is the benefit of hindsight. I'm talking about things like, hey, you owned for something for 350 days. Had you waited two more weeks, your taxes would have dropped had you gone to a long-term capital gain from short-term, because it was in a taxable environment.
And especially at a time when you didn't necessarily need the
cash. Right. Why did you force liquidate something right before you could have lowered the tax implication?
Oh, I didn't know.
Okay. And by the way, the tax gap is typically significant enough that one or two of those mistakes would more than pay for the advisory fees you're paying for a whole year.
Right.
Right? So there's these subtle details in efficiency, and it's not just what you make, it's what you keep. Now, I want to be very clear, because again, all of you listening, you're smart, right? There's no guarantee that advice enhances what you're doing. And a lot of people really are smart. It is possible to do it yourself.
Right.
That is the wild. I mean, and if you love it, again, I've always said, when you do it yourself, you know what it should be?
What?
It should be your job or therapy. Right? You should love doing it.
Right. Agreed. Sometimes it's both. So let's talk about the advice, right? What kind of advice are you getting? And from whom? Because there's times when people say, like, oh, I was talking to my hairdresser. I was talking to my neighbor, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, is your neighbor a professional in that field? Or are they giving you advice about something that's not their field?
I love
the
question. I want to take a break on this one because I want our listeners to come back and think about this. What type of advice are you getting?
Right.
Okay. Now, categorically, not from whom, not personal. What type of advice? Because it's and the phrase to remember is scope. But we got to take a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn
and Katie Shook.
Yeah, True Wealth on News Radio 1240
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show.
Oh, I love it. You jingled. Yay.
And it changes every time.
I
right?
don't care.
So they'll give us our own tune one day. You'll see.
Yep.
Look, if you're just joining us, grab the podcast on this one. It'll be available on our webpage tomorrow, littlejohnfs.com, under the Educate tab. And we're going to post this one because today's show is the advice show.
And yet we're not giving advice.
Right. So we're not,
kind of, maybe.
Well, in a roundabout way, we're talking about how you get advice.
And how you validate your advice.
Is it good advice or not? We've talked about, have you gotten bad advice? You know, that's just an easy one. What about advice that...
My favorite is unsolicited advice.
Yeah. It's like, stop talking about my backswing, right? I don't really golf anyway, but it wouldn't help.
Yeah, stop telling me how to parrot. I'm okay.
So,
scope of advice. At the break, you were talking about scope of advice. What do you mean when you say that?
Okay, so, in the field of advice, right? So we're talking really about financial advisory services, and we've talked on the program before. That's different than brokerage, right?
Right.
Brokerage is about, hey, I need to buy a thing, and it's a transactional event,
right?
Right, and a commission is associated with that event because they're somebody is facilitating a transaction. It's between you and the thing you want is the person making that transaction occur. Really common in the insurance industry. Okay, and that's not a bad thing, right? Hey, you buy life insurance. The agent gets paid for selling you the life insurance. They help with the application. They facilitate all the stuff. They get your questions answered. That's how that works.
Right.
Right. And if you're doing it online, guess what? The online ether sphere, right? That's the agent in that case, right? It's an online brokerage of life insurance. So if you go to SelectQuote or something, then you're just choosing to not have a person. And in many cases, just so you're aware, It doesn't cost any different if you go online and get it versus you have an agent, because it's state regulated oftentimes. And I say oftentimes because there may be unique environments here. But typically speaking, if you want to get, you know, ABC life insurance, if it's not a proprietary company, meaning they have their own agents, or you have to go through their website only, then you are having a brokered relationship, at which point they're just going to connect you with the company based on your conditions and get you life insurance.
Right.
Well, an agent would do the same thing.
That's kind of a slot A, tab B kind of.
In a sense, yeah.
Like
life
a formula.
Insurance is pretty formulaic. It's like, how much money do you want if you die? What are your health conditions so that we can get a sense of how likely you are to die between now and then? And then based on the risk parameters, we're going to price that and you're going to pay for it.
Right.
Right. And that pricing process is the actuarial work. And when they're reviewing your conditions, that's the underwriting work. So that's how that works. Well, look, when we think of advice, it's not transactional, right? The advice is more like a fee for service.
Well, it's ongoing. It's a relationship.
Well, it should be, in our opinion. Like fiduciary advice, you have an ongoing
obligation to make sure that it's still good advice.
Assuming that it is defined in the scope of the advice, right? Here's the thing. If you have an insurance agent that says, I'm a financial planner, are they or aren't they?
I would, if they say they are, then the assumption would be that they
are. Or sometimes they say financial consultant.
Now, right? Why would they make the distinction?
Well, I think it's nomenclature. And the question is, it's sort of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin at that point, right? I don't know how you necessarily define it, but the scope of the advice they offer. Now, if your insurance professional, and I use the term professional just so we're clear here, but if an insurance professional starts to give you advice on your mortgage.
Okay.
Or they want to give you advice on your retirement plan.
Okay.
They may or may not be qualified to do that. They may or may not be licensed to do that, depending on how they are offering the advice.
True.
And typically speaking, they don't delve into those areas. So can they still be called a financial consultant if they're only dealing with your insurance?
I don't know.
Well, in many cases, yes. Because the scope of the advice is limited.
And I think that also touches on something, too. Sometimes when advice out of the scope of what you're maybe going for, right? Like if you were going in to talk about your homeowner's insurance and then all of a sudden you're talking about your mortgage and you're getting financial advice, sometimes the assumption is that because you're seeking a professional in one area, that if they're giving you advice, that they know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the issue.
Isn't it? What is it? The halo effect? Like we assume.
Well, the halo effect is a little different. That's kind of like pretty people. You assume they're smarter and more talented.
Yeah.
Or somebody who demonstrates talent, then you assume that they have talents in other areas, too.
Well, so but that's kind of like if, you effect. Know, if your talent is in one field and then all of a sudden we're talking about a different field and you talk about it with confidence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can certainly imply that you are.
That you know what you're talking
competent,
about.
And it's not a guarantee.
Right.
Well. The larger
I love it, and it's not a guarantee. That's actually important. Go ahead.
Well, when you think about advice, I mean, look, I still turn to other professionals for advice regularly. Okay, I mean, I go to a physician if I need medical advice. I've had various professionals on this program before, be it legal. I've had insurance advisors who are very comprehensive in their advice. I mean, when you talk about risk management as a spectrum, right? Yeah, the insurance industry, many folks are very qualified in their brokerage and agency relationships to talk about everything from life insurance to health insurance, property and casualty insurance. They get into liability coverages and umbrella policies, and then they get into really more exotic stuff. Specialty
like layers
lines,
upon
like,
layers upon yeah, layers
I mean,
of
if
different things.
You have specialty
things.
Business lines or you need bonding or you need other. And they're so very comprehensive and robust risk management expertise.
Right.
Okay. And so that is a niche of expertise or niche, whichever the word is these days. But
tomato, tomato.
Yeah. So if you think about that is financial consulting.
So when you say like stuff like holistic financial advice, or we talk about, what does that mean? Or how would you define that for people?
So holistic is kind of a
buzzword. Because it's kind of a medicinal word.
Yeah, it's a buzzword that implies that it's very comprehensive and that it's going to be covering all of the different aspects of your life, and it's more sort of natural and organic process. Again, those are more buzzy terms, right? Like, I don't know that you just told me what it meant. That's because there's not a definition that's hard-coded.
Well, but I would kind of make a little bit of a discernment in the fact that, you know, if you're calling somebody and you want to talk about your IRA, right, and you're talking about retirement and your IRA, and they address the questions with your IRA, that's very one path. But, yeah, like, so if you call IRA, and say, well, I'm thinking about retirement and what that looks like and where my finances are in retirement. Now, it may include a conversation around your IRA, but it also may include other things in that conversation.
Yeah, and really, it's when we talk about scope,
right?
I'm suggesting that this what you're speaking with your financial professional about and the scope of that relationship, there should be some understanding in the definition. If you really got into the brass tacks of it, you know, if you're going to go deal with a certified financial planner, for example, they're supposed to define the scope of a financial planning engagement.
Right.
And, you know, the financial planning gets thrown around all the time because, again, the definition, it's almost too vague, right? Like, well, planning, right? You know, we're going to plan, like, consultant. What the heck is a consultant?
Anybody right? smarter than you on a topic you're unaware of?
like consultant is just like, well, what do you know? Oh, I'm a business consultant. I'm like, well, what does that mean? That could be anything, right? It's so super vague that it's kind of like, well, what do you do for a living? I go to work. It's like, okay, never mind. I got to go. So that's the issue, right? So what do you think about a consultant? Well, no. And financial advice, financial planning, they're... You have to define the scope. Are we talking about just how much resources for retirement? Are we talking about risk management? Are we talking about when we say holistic or comprehensive, are you really trying to get a broad swipe? I want to look at everything from tax management to retirement to college funding to major purchases to the risk management and insurance both today and in the future. What about if I don't make it? What if I don't die but I'm still around?
Is this why our appointments take like 5 hours?
Yeah.
Just kidding, by the way. They don't take 5 hours.
Usually. But all of these elements that come into your finance, it's this cradle to grave, soup to nuts, whatever the analogy is, but there's a lot of moving parts.
There is a lot of moving parts.
And I don't know that it's possible. I mean, you're not going to find somebody that's an expert in everything.
No.
Right? We use this phraseology a lot. I think what you want is somebody that's a competent expert in many things and a good librarian.
Right. And why do you say librarian?
Well, the librarian knows how to get the answer. They may not know the answer, but they know how to get it.
Right.
Because I think that the financial world, this is my personal take, right? If there's a framework, right? Like the system is built a certain way and certain things fit together. And I don't know all the idiosyncrasies of tax code, for example. But I generally understand how it works.
So and that you could go seek out the tax code that you're looking for.
I can go look for the parts of it and say, well, here's the issue. And we've even had some obscure stuff.
Oh, right? Oh, yeah.
Like really obscure stuff where, you know, you call your CPA and go, how does this work? And they look back at you and they're like crickets, right? Like, I don't know.
Well, I'll bring up one for example, right? So last year there was a weird thing with IRAs and everything because of COVID where they said, hey, if you're having, you know, you need to pull money out of your retirement accounts because of COVID-related expenses, you can. Well, they changed the rules, right? And certain people took advantage of that, which is totally fine, right? Everybody's situation is unique. But they never said how to put it back. They said, well, you can put it back and you have this much time to do it. And everybody went, cool. And then it was time to put it back this year. And everybody went, so how do we do that? And everybody went, I don't know.
And so now it is you amend your return. Last I heard.
Well, no, there's a box you can check that says I plan on putting it back. So it calculates it differently. And then so the rules kept changing because they were kind of being made up as we were going through the process.
We made stuff up last year?
Oh my gosh. So David laughs. We are great librarians in the fact that we get to research how to do stuff. Yeah. And by the way, I feel like a 2-year-old all the time, right? The joke about the 2-year-old always going, why? Why can you do this? Why can you do that? I call and ask why questions constantly.
Yep.
Constantly.
Well, I think we all do. I have another fun example, right? You want to talk about, some of you, this may be relevant, by the way. If you have a 401k plan that has a Roth provision in it.
Right.
And you do not have a Roth IRA. Okay, then if you roll that 401k plan over, it turns out your Roth IRA has a time associated with it. Roth IRAs are supposed to have been in existence for 5 years. Now, careful. I'm telling you how this works, but this is not.
He's telling you framework.
This is not supposed to be personal advice, and so don't act on it that way. And that's my disclosure to anybody listening to this that's going to try to, you know, there you go. Look, the five-year clock starts because if you start a Roth IRA and it's 2 years into the thing and you want to take the money out, you're still going to have potential penalties and tax ramifications. Even if you're over 59 and a half and you did that, you're supposed to have it for 5 years, at which point it will then become, the Roth feature activates, and now distributions will become tax-free after that five-year window has occurred. So when does the clock start on a Roth 401k?
Good question. When does it start?
After you roll it over.
So it doesn't really count, even though it's Roth money in a 401k. The time clock hasn't started.
As I understand it so far, and let me be so far as to also tell you where it's unclear. If you leave it
in there, tax code?
Yeah, if you, I don't know yet. If you leave it in there, can you take distributions from your 401k and without rolling it over and starting the clock at that point? Does you get the original clock on just that? That's unclear.
Yeah,
I don't have the answer yet. So guess what? More library.
Right.
That's how that works. And if you're listening to that going like, huh, then well, now you understand that even the financial pros, and look, I do this stuff all the time. And when I turn to CPAs, you know what they do? Oh, my gosh, I got to go to the, you know, tome of records somewhere and, you know, put on the robes and light the candles and figure it out.
There are times when I've read code and then I go in and I ask David and I said, read this and tell me what you think. And then if he says the same thing I was thinking, then I'm like, oh, okay, then we read it the same. If he says something different, then I'm like, okay, so now we go to a third source. So what do you think?
And it's like, it. Well, like,
because
the other
interpretation
day,
is so important.
I'm curious, what was the answer to the SEP question the other day?
What was the SEP question?
It was the, what's, is it a traditional or an employer contribution or something like that?
Yeah, so the answer to the question was, it was an employer. So if you're doing it for 2020, then it's coded as an employer contribution. But if you're doing it for 2021, it's counted as a traditional SEP contribution. Most of you are going, what the heck does that even mean? It was...
Call your advisor.
Yeah, call your advisor. It was a little thing that our custodian was asking as we were putting the money in. Is this right. is it a SEP employer contribution or a SEP traditional contribution? And I had to call and say, what's the difference?
Right. What's the language on this? Because that means something different in IRA context. And then SEP gets put in front of IRA and you go, and half of you are listening going, what's a SEP IRA? And you know what? Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Not going to matter for most of you. So like,
if
don't
you're self-employed, let's talk about it. But yeah. So again, right. I've been here for 8 years. I feel like I know a lot. And yet I still had to call for clarification.
So that happens all the time. So when it comes to the advice,
be careful.
Right? Be careful.
Check and validate.
Yeah. Yeah. As they say, trust but validate. Or, no, just check and validate. Don't even trust, right?
Just check it and go validate it somewhere else. Get a third party to validate it.
Yeah. I think and understand the scope, right? I got one more thing. Let's take the last break. Okay. And when we come back, we'll talk about abs. That's right. So Katie's like, what? She totally knows what I'm talking about.
7 minute abs.
So eight. So this is a free minute, right? No, we got a few minutes left and we're going to talk about abs and advice. It'll make sense when we come back. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shuck.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
All right. On that note, geez, you guys don't get this. Like, did we mention that for a Tuesday? You would think, if you listen, because, again, consummate radio professionals, that we're not bringing
our
baggage in. Yeah, it's total hooey. So in between, we're like grumble, grumble as we're through growing pains.
See, I like radio personality because personality can be taken any direction you want. But professional, to me, means that you have some kind of decorum that you've got to follow.
Well, and the reality is we're paying to do it, which makes us just rank amateurs. So... I don't know what to say.
I don't know about that. All right, 7 minute abs. Ooh, that was really loud. Sorry, guys. I clapped really loud.
Okie doke. So now that you're half the speakers in the area are damaged, so what do I mean? This really, I'm going to let you explain it, Katie, because
so
it was cute.
I was laughing because obviously we've taught financial peace, and I have taught financial peace in the background years ago. And Dave Ramsey, I remember there was a part when Dave Ramsey says, you know, when you're seeking advice, right? Like if you're seeking marital advice, don't go to the guy that's been divorced three times. Go to the person that has a successful marriage. And if you're seeking health advice, go to the person that has like 8-pack abs or 10-pack abs. Like you don't want to go to the obese.
10-pack abs?
Yeah, I know. He was joking.
Wow.
But he was just saying, like, don't go to the person that that's overweight for weight loss. Like, go to the person that's being successful in the field that you want to be successful and get advice from them. And that was kind of his gist of what he was saying, right? Mm-hmm. Like, pay attention to who you're seeking the advice from.
And then I said, pay attention to the difference between fortunate timing and skill.
Right.
Okay, because this is something that generationally, there's a lot of folks that are probably in their mid to high 70s.
Okay.
That, especially folks that maybe started down in the California area, bought real estate, and then had this explosion in population that occurred over their lifetime that was disproportionate to really many places all over the country. And so you had a lot of sort of real estate millionaires as that population exploded.
Oh, my mom talked about the fact that in the early 80s, when she bought her first house with my dad, right when I was born, they paid $29,000 for their house. Right. You can
and
barely even get a car for $29,000.
That same house
brand new
today is
easily $600,000-$700,000.
Yeah. And so
easily.
And you look at that and say, tell me the dollar purchasing power in 1980 till today, 40 years later. And what I will tell you is that it probably takes $5 for purchasing power for every dollar from 1980.
Well, an interest rate, right?
Yeah, but just do the math on that. So multiply 29,000 times 5, it should be 150.
Right.
And it's 700.
Right.
Okay. That is just disproportionate magnitude there. And, you know, some people are going to be quick to say, well, there's compounding and other things. Yet, nevertheless, that particular market just went crazy.
We talked about measuring sticks, right? What is your measuring stick? Like anybody that has just started becoming an investor slightly after COVID, right? Mm-hmm. And has been in the market up until now has probably seen really good returns.
Oh, yeah. If you've been investing
like
for
if you
like
jumped
a
in
year,
in April,
you're up 40% or something.
And everybody's like, oh, my gosh, the stock market's great, right? Well, yeah, but you haven't ridden any of the lows. All you've seen is all the highs, and you've seen a thing that's a different measuring stick.
So that's not advice. That's circumstance to a degree.
But if that person is giving investment advice.
Well, here's the thing. Sometimes that advice, if you look at the behavior and see did it work? Right. And not just like, well, you know what? I happened to buy a place in San Francisco before it was a thing, and then it was a thing. And so I got to sell it for $5 million. Like, well,
good for you for locating one-off deals.
Yeah, that's awesome for you. But that's not a very reproducible deal.
Thing. Yeah.
So that makes it fortunate, but it's hard to call it advisable.
Right.
Right. I mean, like I will tell you what, I can give you this free advice. There's no downside to it. Go find super, super cheap stuff that in really short order will be worth way more than you paid for it. And then sell it to somebody for more.
Okay.
Like there's magic financial advice. If you just do that, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Now I need like the truffle pig to sniff out the really weird exotic thing that nobody knows exists.
Go hunt for unicorns. Yes.
Okay. Glad we had that talk. Thanks.
So, the planning side of it, there's no luck in it isn't accurate.
No, because there's people that got into Tesla on the ground floor, and there's people that got into Apple and IBM on the ground floor.
It's less about luck than saying, you know, those folks were willing to make that risk-reward trade, and it worked out. But sometimes you just, something just goes crazy, your timing's really fortunate, and it just worked out, right? But if you happen to be an investor in GameStop when it went bananas, and you were never in it for anything other than like, wow, this thing just went up like 400% in a week. And you sold it because you just said, I'm done here.
Or when Bitcoin first came out and you went, interesting. I'll just plot 10 grand down on Bitcoin and we'll see where
it goes.
I doubt
it. And, you know, most people, it's like, you know, Bitcoin's like $5. You know what? Why don't I put a couple $100 in here and just see what happens?
Right.
And now they're like millionaires. And you're like, what? Like, literally, it was a gamble back then.
Right.
It was a straight up gamble. It worked. But
and what is the word that we use in our industry for that?
lucky?
That was not the word. Speculation was okay. The word I was looking for. Like,
which word are we talking about? I think it's lucky.
Well, you pay less if it's only five letters, but lucky.
But anyhow. It's
so be careful who you're getting your advice from. If you know, do they represent the type of advice that you are seeking, right? Like if you're seeking,
well, get a second opinion if you need to.
Right.
But just know what the scope of the advice is, right? Advice comes from lots of places, and realize that advice is kind of like armpits, right? Everybody's got them. Most of them stink. That's how it goes. Got to be careful about that stuff. Be discerning.
Armpits? We're comparing advice to armpits?
Just saying. Our listeners have told you. There's a lot worse things to use.
Oh, yeah. That was a cleaner version than I've ever heard. So I will stick with stinky armpits.
Thank you very much. So, and bottom line is that if you don't know, right, then seek advice.
Well, and are you seeking validating advice,
yeah,
right? Like, do you have your mind already made up and you are
cover that
seeking advice? Maybe next week.
Confirmation bias is a disaster. Don't go looking for the advice that you want. Go looking for good advice.
Right.
Okay.
And be willing to accept that maybe what you thought was a good idea isn't that a good idea.
Right. I mean, tough love is still maybe love, right? Somebody says, like, that's a terrible idea. Maybe it's a terrible idea. Okay. Maybe they're totally unqualified. Maybe it's a great idea and they don't know what they're talking about. But, you know, you can triangulate on advice, too. You can get multiple opinions. Just remember that if you surround yourself with people that aren't particularly competent, you have to be careful that the advice is not
completely incompetent.
So, anyway.
Oh, goodness.
You know, as you know, advice is kind of our gig. That's what we do. We've talked about it on the show today. What I'm going to tell you is, there's lots of information out there. In fact, maybe too much, because it's hard to filter it and discern it. If you are not comfortable or confident in getting to the advice yourself,
or you want a second opinion,
yeah, get help, right? That's how that works. So I would tell you, and it's not a you have to call us thing. It's a but get somebody.
No, I'll say right? it. You have to call us. So 541-375-0898.
Okay, and there's no shame in that, right? Because I guess we are paying for
it. I got no shame. Not on that one, I don't.
Fair enough. Well, look, guys, as I'm looking at the clock, I know we're about out of time. You can tell by the music. So we'll simply leave it at this. Advice is cheap. Good advice is invaluable. So make sure you're seeking good advice. And if we can help you in any way, don't hesitate to reach out. LittleJohnFS.com. And again, the number?
541-375-0898.
All right. Well, until next time, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for tuning in. This has been David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240
KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.